Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 90. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following insight. As it is well known that the devotees control the Lord by praising Him. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. No, the one on the case before. Thereafter, having seen that her child had all the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are you sure? Devaki, who was very much afraid of Kamsa and unusually astonished, began to offer prayers to the Lord.
Yes, we are
The astounded part. Oh well, at least we got through two paragraphs just in a moment. We have been spending the whole day on a paragraph. Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the following insight. As it is well known that the devotees control the Lord by praising Him, I will make this child submissive by my prayers and then express my desires. Thinking in this way, Devaki speaks, O Lord, we are afflicted by fear at every second, but You are not fearful at all. She expresses this in four verses, 24 through 27.
I was thinking yesterday how there was no time.
Okay.
This is actually the first moment when Madhujan and Aishwarya get introduced. Because she's feeling reverential towards the word, but then she's fearful and counseled and harmed. So this is the first sangha.
Yeah. So because Dwarka is that sangati. And so then, yes, you can say is then this come into, because the point is, what's Dwarka pastimes? His appearance. That's where it'll start from. Because otherwise, before that, then the associates are there, they're getting ready and everything like that, but you don't really, we don't hear much about Dwarka before Krishna appeared. So then, yes, so this is a natural place, and then it's, what more natural place than the mother to introduce it, you know, because he can appreciate both aspects.
Yeah. I thought he was born in Mathura.
Yes, born in Mathura, but the point is all the Mathura Vasis, where did they go? Dwarka. So we can say it's that. Means Mathura means they'll have more sweetness than in Dwarka. You know, because Dwarka will have more of the kingly, formal kind of aspect. So we see is that Mathura, it's a shorter time there. The main is there, but it's the position of what you would say is Goloka. If we're defining Braj as Gokul, then you have Gokul as Braj, and then everything else is Goloka. So that means it has that Vaikuntha aspect. Or sometimes it'll just say there's Vrindavan and there's Vaikuntha. So there's Vaikuntha. So we'll think, well, there's Vaikuntha planets with Vishnumurtis, but within Goloka, Mathura and Dwarka are Vaikuntha, right? Just the higher form of Vaikuntha. You know, just like I also, Ayodhya will be Vaikuntha, Hastinapur will be Vaikuntha. So, in other words, it's the aspect where these elements of liberation and that are there, but at the same time, there's the aspect of sweetness. You know, but it's still Vaikuntha because of the majesty. It's just a little sweeter majesty. Yeah. It's also this principle is that one controls whose service. Does that make sense? So that's why it's so much misunderstood in the Vedic system. The modern will look at it and go, you know, where's the control? But the Vedic is all about control. But the point is, since it's about a relationship, it's not about control without the relationship. The modern is just in control. Right? But the Vedic is, you control for the nourishment of the relationship. Does that make sense? So, means, how you say? On what, if we look at it from one perspective, you have the husband and wife. So the husband's doing all the different things to please the wife. Right? But if we look at it from the official point of view, who's in control? Right? The husband. Right? Does that make sense? And from another level, then you have that the wife is doing all kinds of things in service for the husband. But, you know, how you say, unofficially, you know, in all times, all places, all circumstances, in all cultures of the world, who's in control? Right? The wife. But what it is this, both are means controlling through service. That's the whole thing. So this idea is that I will be in control and not serve is not actually it's not actually a human platform. You know, I mean, gorillas do that, silverback gorillas. You know, it's just like if you're at a zoo and you hand something to eat to a female gorilla, she will look around in fear. Because if the male gorilla hasn't seen it and she can eat it and get away with it, then cool, because she's a gorilla, she would like to eat it. But if he sees and figures out she has something and he didn't get first option, then he comes along and establishes his authority. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is one controls through service. What, this idea I will control, and that it's not actually the you understand. So it's a very unique thing, because the Lord controls the devotees through all the nice things he does, like for the parental rasa, all the nice behavior Krishna has, or you know, all the nice jokingness and everything, or the naughtiness, but it's a pleasant naughtiness. It's not in opposition to, it's in you know, just comes up as a natural, playful thing. So these things, the parental Ross is pleased by this. Does that make sense? The cowherd boys, they do service and everything like this. Does that make sense? You know, they serve through that. So this aspect of, yeah. Does that make sense? So it's an important element that's here. Sri Devaki said, my dear Lord, there are different Vedas. So even she's doing the service, but it has that sense of possession that she can control him through rendering the service. So that's what makes the specialness that is there, right? So it's about Krishna. So the control is to please Krishna, not to control to please ourselves. Does that make sense? Okay. Sri Devaki said, my dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as imperceptible, perceivable through words and the mind, yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements. And by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes. Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. Srila Prabhupada comments. Vishnu is the origin of everything, and there is no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna, because both of them are Vishnu Tattva. From the Rig Veda, we understand Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Padam Padam. The original substance is the all-pervading Lord Vishnu, who is also Paramatma and the effulgent Brahman. The living entities are also part and parcel of Vishnu, who has various energies, Parasya Shaktir Vividhaya Shruyate, Subhaviki Jnana Bhala Kriya Cha. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 1365 purport. Vishnu or Krishna is therefore everything. Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matas sarvam pravartate. Huh. You can remember what the verse is by it's 10.8 or 108. Yeah. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Krishna, therefore, is the original cause of everything. Sarva Karana Karanam, Brahma Samhita 5.1. When Vishnu expands in his all-pervading aspect, we should understand him to be the Nirakar Nirvishesh Brahma Jyoti. So, here it means it doesn't have anything material. There's nothing material in this. Right? So, it doesn't mean that there's not qualities, because as we see, otherwise, how do you get a creation unless it's based on qualities, right? As we said, every action has a quality that it's obtaining. Every action has to have forms that can perform the action, right? Because if you want something, if you want a result, you have to have a form that has it, that's in the same thing, right? I want a potato sabji, I have to start with potatoes. Right? I can't start with an old boot or something. Right? You know. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then you're starting with that form. And then, to perform the activity, how do you know what activity is to be done with those items? And then there's knowledge. Right? But you have to have the attitude that matches what can be obtained. Right? Means, in other words, someone, a cook, has the mood of a cook. Therefore, they can cook. Yes.
Can we say that from this discussion, if we have a mood of devotion, we will not approach Brahman or Paramatma?
Means we understand them, we deal with them, but it's not that's not our goal. So, in other words, Krishna as Bhagavan is the goal, but Krishna as Bhagavan also includes Paramatma and Brahman. Therefore, we can see Krishna in everything through his Brahman and Paramatma aspects. And that reminds us of that person who is Bhagavan. So there's a non-difference, because if you say he's everywhere, but who's everywhere? Krishna's everywhere. Right? He's entered every atom and in between every atom, but who? That's Krishna. But he does that as Paramatma and Brahman. Does that make sense? So that there's a non-difference there. This is also one of those, how you say, the gray areas for us. It's because we, you know, it's defined in one way, but then at least it, that principle is there. Although everything emanates from Krishna, he is ultimately a person. So it emanates. And then you have eminent and imminent.
Imminent and transcendent.
Transcendent.
Yes.
And eminent?
Eminent and great.
Great. What is the one that means you can see the whatever it is that's...
What
yeah.
Imminent.
Imminent.
Yes.
Imminent. Eminent.
Well, yeah, eminence usually not. It's imminent and transcendent are the two kind of contradictory qualities. He's part of everything, but he's also beyond. So it's imminent and transcendent.
Okay. Imminent and eminent.
Yeah.
Because there's three words that they're the same, but two of them are pronounced differently and two of them are spelled differently.
Yeah, eminent is the great, is E-M-I, and then imminent, all-pervading, I-M.
But isn't there a third one? Because they always are confusing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Although everything emanates from Krishna is ultimately a person. Aham adir hi devanam. Bhagavad Gita 10.2.
Oh, sorry. There's imminent, which is about to happen, about to take place.
Imminent.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a different spelling than the other.
That's I-M-M-I.
Okay, I-M-M-I. And the other one is?
I-M-M-A.
Imminent. Okay. Yeah, okay, that's the thing. Yeah. About to take place.
Yeah.
Has taken place, and they're, and it's very great, pervading, and then they are transcendent to that, what has taken, that that is, was, is, and will take place.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Hominence.
Yes. He is the origin of Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, and from him many other demigods are manifested. And from them many other demigods are manifested. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 14.27, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Brahman rests upon me. So you see, his Prabhupada's putting in more principles, more elements in that, and giving more quotations. Much of the time there's much more explanation. But because it's all, so much has been explained, now you can just give the points and their reference. Krishna, Vishnu, is the actual origin of everything, as stated in the Vedas. Yasya bhasha sarvam idam vibhati. The absolute truth is described later in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.18.15 as satyam jnanam anantam yad brahma jyotir sanatanam. The Brahma Jyoti is sanatana, eternal, yet it is dependent upon Krishna. Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Right, so all these contradictions, that's why he can't be understood. Because the Karmi and Jnani have to use material intelligence. In material intelligence, then things have to, can't be contradictory. Right, that's the whole process of logic, is to remove contradiction. Right, to make it actually there. But Krishna being the origin of everything, then that means all these contradictions have to come from one source. Right? And then coming from, because we can say is, no, but they could come from different sources, but if they did, they wouldn't match. Right? You know, like, you know, there's the saying, too many cooks spoil the broth. Right? Because each one has a different idea of what you should do and what you should, you know, like that. And so you'll end up with terrible soup. Right? So, then the point is it has to come from one source because it's so perfectly balanced. Right? So that means then all contradictions are resolved there. So to be able to understand that which is the Lord means we can't use material intelligence. It has to be from spiritual intelligence. Does that make sense? So that's why only if the Lord reveals can it be understood. That's why all these great intelligent, you know, scholars can't understand, whether they're Vedic or non-Vedic. They just can't understand. And then add on top of that, much of the time they're impractical, so then you really are lost to explain anything, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, you see in the prayers, much of the time, these contradictory qualities are always brought out. Why? Because they're devotees. And so, therefore, they understand them. He's unlimited, but he's standing right here. Right? He's the source of everything, but at the same time, he's, you know, following all the rules and all that. He's the Lord of creation. He's fearless, but Mother Jashoda is chasing with a stick, and his eyes are restless due to fear. So you'll see in all the prayers, one of the things, one of the features is the contradictory qualities. Right? Because we're so used to it that, yeah, these are what they always say in the prayers. We don't necessarily notice that element. Right? But some devotees bring it out. They specifically state it in that, and others don't. They just tell the glories. Because they're glories of Brahman, glories of Paramatma, glories of Bhagavan. So they'll have contradictory aspects. And he's the creator, maintainer, destroyer of the worlds. So, there's on all these, there's contradictory elements. But some will mention it, some won't. But if you're describing the Lord, this is what you're going to be discussing. Yes? Spiritual intelligence means understanding things connected to Krishna in devotion. That's spiritual intelligence. Otherwise, if you don't see it connected to Krishna, then that's less intelligent, you know, like that. And if you don't see it in connection with Krishna, in devotion, then it's still a waste of time. Even if you see it connected to Krishna, but not in devotion, it will just give the karma and jnana which you are pursuing. Because if it's not in devotion, it means it has to be karma and jnana. It's bhakti or it's karma and jnana. Right? And it can be a mix. It can be mixed karma and jnana, or mixed bhakti with karma, mixed bhakti with jnana, mixed with both, like this. But the point is it's bhakti that is not the waste of time. Everything else is the waste of time. So let us say we're doing bhakti, we're trying to please the Lord, but there's some material desire. We want some particular facility. Now, by performance of devotional service in that, we may get that facility. But the point is then unless that facility is now get used in Krishna service, then that facility is a waste of time. And it will be lost anyway, so all that endeavor to get it, then it was lost. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point.
Yeah.
Krishna is representatives. That's your pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksija, and aprakrita.
Yeah, because sometimes you say the devotee is not have to study spiritual knowledge, but when it comes to their application, they don't apply spiritual knowledge. It means that it hasn't been given by the
spiritual. It just depends. It's just, but that's what mixed devotional service means, is that we know about Krishna, we're trying to please Krishna, and we're doing the best we can, but it's not necessarily that all the ways we understand things or apply things are necessarily have that devotional element. Means in the immediate sense. In the long-term sense, yes. But in the immediate sense, no. It's just like, okay, we're going to get a house. And, okay, so, you know, what's with the house? Okay, you know, we can have devotees come over, we can do programs, you know. So many different things we can do like that, nice, devotional service. But what's the bottom line for that? Because you could also do that with a hall. In fact, you'd have more space if you just rented a garage or hall, and it'd probably be cheaper. You know what I'm saying? So what's the actual reason you're getting a house? Right? You know, for that sense of security or elements of the support of the family relationship and things like that. Right? Does the soul require that? No, that's the covering of the soul. But the soul can take that and engage that in Krishna's service and get the benefit of devotional service from that. Same time as the material benefits that go along with karma, jnana will come. Right? But the point is engage, that they come. In other words, if I'm doing it in devotion, when I get the result, it should continue with devotion. Otherwise, then that was karma or jnana, because by definition, that karma or jnana can't function without bhakti. So therefore, I'm performing the bhakti. When I get them, if I stop the bhakti, in other words, I get the house and now enjoy the house, the bhakti left. So that was bhakti misra karma. But because the bhakti that we're in touch with is sampradayic, it has that potency, so it's not like the smartas and others. So it will further us forward in devotional service, but because of our attachment to the karma, that may slow down or even stop, you know, temporarily, our progress in bhakti. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how we look at it. So even there, if we go back on that Vedanta Sutra point, you know, since we can't get past that paragraph, then here's another way you could look at it, that when we're saying about the jnani, and then saying the jnani now in the liberated platform goes forward into pure bhakti, and then on to prema, then we could also say is that it's a devotee who is practicing jnana yoga, but the jnana yoga is a little more prominent than that. They want liberation, they want to be freed from material entanglement, which is a material desire. It's not necessary in devotional service, right? So the point is not having any material, I mean, seeing everything connected to Krishna, that's liberation. But what we just say it as transcendental vision. But liberation will define it when it's something that we want from the process. We want to be freed from the entanglement because of all the difficulty that comes from the material nature, rather than I want to just see everything connected to Krishna, because then I see so many opportunities for service. Because then here, there's no mention of what happiness I'll get from it. Right? So in other words, and it's already been pointed out that the happiness from liberation is, you know, like the water in a calf's hoofprint compared to the unlimited ocean. Right? So therefore, it's not given that much credence. That's the thing. It may move back and forth because of the mix, because of the anartas. But as we become purified by engaging in Krishna service, the same activity then purifies us. That's why it's saying the result has to be for Krishna, because the reason we're doing it may not be for Krishna. Right? I'm getting money. The money's for Krishna. But why am I getting money? Because I have the concept that money will bring, you know, security, will bring happiness, will bring, you know, all these different things. But because I see the end result is for Krishna, as we discussed before, what the end is, then we say, what's a devotee? Right? So therefore, then it's that. And with time, as we get purified, then the process and the knowledge will become purified, where we'll see that also on that same devotional platform. Then we'll call that knowledge bhakti. Right? Because it's not stemming from goodness. Does that make sense? Yeah.
What's the difference between adhokshaja and apakshaja?
Adhokshaja means the Lord descends down into. Right? Like that. While aprakrita means not even in connection with the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, the principles of seeing that, as we're discussing the jnani, he sees everything as the energy of the Lord. But that means the Lord is descending down into that. And then all those things then have a dharma. And so that's the extension that he'll go. Because dharma means if I see Krishna in everything, that means then he's the one, is the nature of everything. So the nature is automatically seen when we appreciate that all-pervading aspect of the Lord, either as Brahman or Paramatma. Right, so dharma is included. But for those who aren't, then aren't looking at it so much like that, then because you're performing dharma, he is there in the dharma, that's why it gives us results. So in other words, vikarma, that's what's below that, or artha and kama, they'll only give their results in their connection to dharma. So in the modern, that people don't follow any religious process and don't follow any tradition, if you look at it, those people that don't, what do they have? Right? They sit down at their favorite watering spot, you know, drinking beer and complaining. That's their whole rasa, is just complaining. And who are they complaining about? All the guys that work hard and actually have the facilities. But actually, otherwise, they wouldn't be drinking beer. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Is then it goes on. Is that what? But it's connected. It means it has a nature, a dharma. You follow that, it gets results. So this whole idea is that tradition doesn't matter. Traditions, if you want results, tradition is the only thing that matters. If you don't follow that, you don't get the result. Now some follow by knowledge. Some follow by, they just have some previous karma and practice from previous lives, so therefore they still do that. But even they have all that, it's very shortly it will run out. Right? Maximum, you'll see it into the grandchildren. You won't see it beyond that. Not from his endeavor. You understand? So, like that. That's why when the grandfather dies, then the whole family scene changes. You know, and then the grandson is known because he's the grandson of that god. Not that he's great on his own. You know, there's the son of, well, how will they do this and that? Are they going to be able to juggle it? Well, there's some cracks in the thing, you know, all the tabloids like that. Then when it gets down to the son, he's just, you know, a person that now and again you mention whenever he comes into the news. Otherwise, you don't bother. But the grandfather, they look out for him. They go looking for him. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, because he's following the rules that's there, whether he knows the Vedic rule or not, but he's following it. Therefore, the artha and kama come. There's no question of getting artha or kama if there's no dharma, like that. But those who profess the non-need or non-necessity of of following the standards. You know, it's just whatever you feel. The only thing you get out of it is that feeling. You don't get any results. Does that make sense? You just get the results of the improper action you perform. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. How to ensure that no one changes sampradaya?
Due to this, because they present more technically and they resolve complications.
They present more tech. I guarantee you, bring any one of those scholars, they won't understand some of the stuff that's here. But it's there in Prabhupada's books. Means, in other words, real scholars in other sampradayas appreciate what Prabhupada's written. Because being a scholar, they understand those different things, they can appreciate how great that is. These real scholars, those who want to present themselves and all that, so therefore, you know what I'm saying? In other words, the real scholars, you won't change sampradayas because they'll be supporting, because what's the point? Why would you want someone from another sampradaya to join your sampradaya and then you could take them seriously?
We go out and learn like Sanskrit and Latin.
Yeah. But the whole... Yeah. But that's because we're jigyasus. Why would we go to them to learn Sanskrit? We have Harinamamrita Vyakaran. It's Narayan's Sanskrit grammar. You don't get higher than Narayan's. So they want to go out and learn Shiva's one when they could learn Narayan's? You don't know any other. That's what your family does. That's what you grew up. Everyone speaks Shiva's grammar and all that. Fine, great. Then you use it. But if you have the opportunity, why wouldn't you use Narayan's? You know what I'm saying? As if, go ahead, knock me out. Try to even fill up one hand with dynamic, you know, staying, you know, fully practicing Sanskrit scholars in our society. Go ahead. Let's have a name. I knew of one. He's dead.
Our society, there's...
Yeah. Like that. Because, what's his name? Gopi Purana, you would think of him as a Sanskrit scholar. Bhanu Maharaj is a Sanskrit scholar, but you don't think of him as a Sanskrit scholar. He's Bhanu Maharaj. You know, that's the only definition. You know, because he can do anything. He can play all these guys that come with the tats and the powder and the bun and the, you know, got to have the black and white, you know, cheddar around your neck to play the mridanga. Bhanu Maharaj can play way better than them. He's Japanese. If he decides to play mridanga, he practices 6 hours straight a day. And he does that until there's no more mantras. And then, okay, well, did that, and then he moves on. But it's just Banumaraj. Just like Prabhupada. Do we call him a scholar? No, but he's a scholar. Any scholar knows he's a scholar. You know, do we call him a chef, a master chef? No, but his cooking is, you know, you understand? So, as far as managing everything, so he's just Prabhupada. So that's the thing, is being a devotee is the better. But if your occupation is specialized, because his is not just on Sanskrit, but Gopi Prana that was on Sanskrit, so to call him a scholar then is a glorification. You understand? But that's the point. Is the others, and they think this is so special. Then, so what? You know what I'm saying? So if you have good association, then there won't be a problem. But they can't even properly associate. They don't have good association. Because good association in another sampradaya won't invite you into their sampradaya. Did Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he's from the Madhva Sampradaya, did he take reinitiation? No. So then? Yeah. So one has to understand there's etiquette. So such people, now I'll give you an example. Okay, we have Genghis Ji, right? Genghis? Huh? Oh well. There's this guy in a very short horse with a very big hat, and it's really furry, right? And he's quite stocky. Okay? And he somehow or another rose up to being in control of this whole migrant nation. Right? So they from Mongolia over to Turkey. They would just move back and forth because, you know, you stay in one place, it gets boring, right? You know, because you have to loot and pillage. That's fun, right? So now the point is that you can't stay in one place and keep looting and pillaging because then after a while they run out of funds, right? So you have to move. So by the time you get to Mongolia and all that and loot and pillage there, now, you know, it's right back over in Turkey. So you head back over that way, right? The guys in the middle, it doesn't do so good. But, you know, at the two ends, they do quite okay, right? So, now, in one battle that was there, then in this battle, two officers from the other side came over and gave information. You know, they were traitors to their own side. And so he used that, Genghis used that information to advantage and won the battle. Then, after the battle, then these two officers thought now, because they could see, okay, he's the bigger man, we'll take his side, not our officer's side. Like that. And so, you know, not our king's side. And so then they thought, now he'll give us big positions and this and that. So after everything was settled and everything was, you know, they made peace with the other side and all that and everything was arranged, then, you know, then the question comes, okay, what about these two guys? He turned to his men and said, kill them. Now you could say, well, he's ungrateful, he's this or that. No, it wasn't that. He said, if they are not loyal to their own master, they won't be loyal to anybody. So in other words, they're only looking after their own benefit. They're not actually part of a system. So since we're having war there, we took advantage of this, but these guys are not trustworthy. You know, so, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So why would any smart person in any sampradaya want someone from another sampradaya? If you've already surrendered and all that, it's bona fide and all that, can't take you back to Godhead, and then you switch lines, then you know, as far as your connection, why would anybody trust them? You know, like you give them some service there, you know, Hanuman gives them service, and then next day, where's the guy? And, you know, he says, well, I heard he went over to Dwarka. You know? You know, it's like, you know, who's going to trust such people? So that's why this point of that loyalty to the guru, to the sampradaya. It's not that teachings and all that is another thing. But the point is that practice and all that, why it would look like that? But who cares about his point of view? So the point is, unless they have good association, you know, the point is this, what is he going to do with his Sanskrit anyway? As I said, how many books have been translated by all these scholars? They've all gone and learned all this Sanskrit. Where are the books? Right? There's one or two, and they've been there forever. Right? We don't really see any new scholars translating books. So the whole point is it's aparavidya, it's a material knowledge. So unless you learn that from someone, you know, who has the same mood, then you're going to take on whatever you associate with. You know, just like those who learn the Sanskrit at the university. They take on the university mood, the approach to the language. And so therefore, when you discuss the Vaishnav things, they'll argue with you because they'll use the modern perspective rather than the traditional. Of what value is that? In fact, better they didn't know Sanskrit. It would be, you know, in other words, they don't know Sanskrit, okay, you don't add anything, but at least you don't detract by misapplying your Sanskrit. Does that make sense? You know, therefore, they better a empty barn than a barn full of bad cows. You know what I'm saying? So this point is very, very strong. Why would they do that? Is that what I'm saying? Yes.
Already being imperfect, we are in a proper form.
Yeah, and you are perfect. So then, how you and your imperfection, how can you understand what is perfection?
Immediate authority. Like,
yeah, so what? But immediate authority, why is it the word immediate authority suddenly everyone goes, oh yeah, right.
Because he has fallen down to the sense identification.
He's fallen down to?
Sense identification and he has left the path.
He's fallen, he has left the path.
Yeah,
and what has that got to do with you? What has that got to do with you? You're on the path, he's not on the path. How is the immediate authority if he's not? How is the immediate authority if he's not on the path?
You're taking the instructions from him.
You're taking instructions from him, so he's still practicing devotional service. He's not practicing at all. He's out. He's living at his grandmother's house because her cooking's so good, right? Okay, and he can wake up late in the morning and he can read Stardust. Okay, great. So why would you be taking instruction from him if he's not part of the process? You know what I'm saying? If you have a nice camaraderie and you ask him, you know, something and get his advice and all that, and he's advising you how to do your service nicely in ISKCON, then there's no problem. But is he telling you to join another sampradaya because he fell down, now you have to join another sampradaya? Or what happens if someone falls there? Then, you know... You have to remember, there's only four chairs. You know. Otherwise, what do you do?
You know. Like changing the authority, like.
Yeah, but that does have a name. Like that, you understand? Means, and we're not talking about the transcendental position like Pingala. We're talking about the untranscendental position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, this kind of thing no one takes kindly to. Right? No one likes it if one makes these adjustments. Does that make sense? Now, yeah, so if something's bona fide, why you'd have to adjust it? Because the point is, did that other sampradaya come and pick you up off the street where you were? No. Can they? Most likely not. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's the whole point. We don't do that. Yes?
It's an interesting point. You mentioned about the devotion that you take the initiation. After writing Govinda Bhasha and giving us the opposition, he didn't give the initiation also. Because those people approached him, they said, we want to, he said, no, you stay where you are. Appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Because the point is it's the instruction. The diksha is a rite to show that you're serious about practicing the Vaishnav process. But in that, the most important is hearing from the spiritual master. So now, if they wanted to hear from him, and practice you know, the how you say, the Vaishnava line with that understanding of Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, there's no problem in that. You know? That's not the problem. It's that you're connected to the bona fide Sampradaya. That's what's important. Now, ideally, then, within that, naturally, you would generally work within that, but it's not always. So, therefore, then, that higher understanding. Now, one may say, oh, but that's what I'm saying. I'm going to the Shris from there, but you can't say it's higher. You can't say going to Vaikuntha is higher than going to Goloka. Because even on their best day, they can only get you to lower Goloka. Even if you want to get to Vrindavan, but it'll still be within the realm of Vaikuntha. It won't be Braj. Because that point of Aishwarya and all that's there. That's what makes their Sampradaya. You know? Does that make sense? So you can't say that going from Achinta Beda Beda Tattva to the others is a step up in instruction. But going from any of the other four into Achinta Beda Beda Tattva, that's a step up. Because Vyasadeva, he went from his understanding into Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. That's the step up. That you can do. But that connection, that Vaishnava connection, is already maintained. If you already have in one of the four Sampradayas, then what's the problem? But now if you can continue by understanding, because Lord Chaitanya is the avatar for this age, so then following him, because the other four acharyas, they took instruction from Lord Chaitanya. So to continue in that way, because then they may not be seeing it so much like that. But generally those who are real scholars and really studied, they appreciate. They actually do. They appreciate what we do. They don't look at all the things. When we look at this, my authority, this, that, and all this, you know, stuff that we see, it's not that they don't know that stuff's there. They just don't bother with it. Because the reality of what the mission of Lord Chaitanya is, that goes beyond these things. You know, it's just like, let's say you have two perspectives, okay? We have Ravana's perspectives, and you have the, you know, those who appreciate Ram's pastimes perspective. Okay? So one we would say would be devotional, one we would say would be material. Okay, what's the and what we're going to have the perspective on is the monkey army. So, what's Ravana's perspective? A bunch of monkeys, low class, uncultured. This is, you know, what is this? You know, you call this an army? You know, that kind of thing. But what is everybody else? This is Ram's army. These are devotees. They're all there, surrendered. You know, so are we finding fault because they carry rocks? You know, that's the whole point. And so that aspect is those who are actually scholarly, they don't see those faults. So if they're scholarly and see those faults, they're not actually a real scholar. Like that. To be able to see what is the purity of the mission and what is there and how people are taking part and the benefit they're getting because of that contact of bhakti, despite all the conditioning that's there. So they can engage that all and encourage and all that. At the same time, as they're not bewildered or illusioned that the particular position that they are socially or culturally or religiously in is ideal. They know, but they know what's the essence of it. Therefore, they're saragrahi. Right? They take the essence, while the others take the rules. But then, which rules they take? Do they take Vedic rules or their own rules? So saragrahi means he takes the essence, and then he can engage those who are attached to rules, those who are opposed to rules. In other words, the only one who can engage the Niyamagrahites or. Like that is a saragrahi. Because he sees the essence, he sees what they're missing. Because each one of them is trying to accomplish something by a standard. One is, I follow the rules. That's my standard. The other is, I don't do anything blindly. But both are missing the point because it's not about Krishna. So because he sees Krishna, he can add Krishna into their rules, and he can add Krishna in their lack of understanding of the rules so that they see the value of following the rules. So in other words, they'll end up following the rules for Krishna. You don't have not following the rules for Krishna. It means you can do that if you want to become a Palinda or something on the other side of Govardhan. They don't follow the rules. You know. Right? In Braj. Who's the boyfriend of all the girls? Krishna, right? But the Palinda girls have boyfriends. You understand? But they're also devoted to Krishna. So, tribal life is there. If you like it, you're attached to it, hey! And guaranteed, the Palindas walk around with nothing on the top. It's just normal there. Like that. So, in other words, in the Vedic culture, girls could walk around with nothing on the top, but what's their position? They're considered servants. They're on the bottom. They're not leaders. They're not like that. In other words, you see, in pictures like that, the girls without the tops, there's one with tops on. She's the one they're serving. Like that. So yeah, it is. It's part of the tribal culture. You know, no one minds tribals walking around like that, because they're tribals. You know, the cultured people, then they follow the standards. So, therefore, whatever a philosopher may describe as ultimately Krishna or Lord Vishnu, sarvam kalvidam brahma, param brahma param tama, pavitram paramam bhavan, Bhagavad Gita 10:12. According to different phases of understanding, Lord Vishnu is differently described, but in fact, he is the origin of everything. Okay, so we see here is that therefore, that's your Upanaya. Right, because that concludes all what was been before. So, basically, all that before, that is you, Udaharana. Right? You're opening, Vishnu is the origin of everything. There's no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord, because both are Vishnu Tattva. Okay? Vishnu is the origin of everything. That's your Pratigya. And there's no difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna, because both of them are Vishnu Tattva. That's your reason. Right? Then, from the Rig Veda, we understand over there, and all that is Upanaya. I mean, Udaharana. Then with this, therefore, that's your Upanaya. And then we may conclude, therefore, that Lord Vishnu is everything, although he's also different from everything. This is the Chintabheda Veda Tattva philosophy. That's your Siddhanta or Nirnaya. Right? Nigama. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, four of them are very small. The Udaharana is the big one. So, we can say as no, but it's bringing you close in the explanation because it's defeating this aspect and all that, but it's just doing that part. If there's many parts, it does all that. Then it will take all those and bring it together. Catch how it works? So, but we see here is then in how Prabhupada will do Mr. Charyas, when the Pratigya is given again, it's given to a point of, first is about understanding, now it's about application or realization. So in other words, by hearing it, the whole discussion, then you come to realize it, then now you can apply it. So although it's different from, this is the Chintabheda Veda Tattva. Right? So now we can see how he is everything but different. We have to be able to see the both. Devaki continued, after millions of years at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything, manifested and unmanifested, is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the unmanifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Anantasesh Nad. Right? So then here we say, manifest and unmanifest. Okay, five gross, subtle conception and the manifest categories enter into the unmanifested substance. Right. So then you get this transition between the manifestation back into the avyakta. Right. Does that make sense? So here's an example where avyakta will mean pradhan. Right. But that's generally how it's used. But as we see in Vedanta Sutra, because then they take that and then try to make this aspect of philosophy that's wrong, right? Because they're trying to say that the living entity is pradhan, right? Because why do they want to do that? Because in their philosophy, merging back into pradhan is their perfection. Therefore, then they'll use that. Then we'll say, no, here it means the body. Right? Like that. It doesn't mean. And so that leaves the soul as separate. So what merges is the body, not the soul. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Seshnag, right? So because he is the last in the expansion. So that Ananta Sesh, right? Because he's Sesha. He's the last of the expansions. This particular form. Okay? Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur writes, "For one who is not destroyed during Mahapralaya, what is the question of fear?" Right? So when everything's destroyed at the end of Brahma's life and you're not destroyed, so what's the fear about it? Right? So if you're connected with he who is not destroyed, then you're not destroyed. Right? Because if we identify as servant of Krishna, then who's servant of Krishna? The soul. So why do we have the particular body we have? From identifying not as a servant of Krishna. So the point is to render service, you have to have a body. So if you identify as servant of Krishna, if this body is lost, then the spiritual body will be produced. So there's no fear. But if you're not connected with the eternal, then when this body ends, then that's what you know of as yourself and identity. And then, you know, now what's the next body going to be? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. Srila Prabhupada adds, "Devaki therefore prayed, after many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva again enters by the force of time into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, and the pradhan enters into you." Right? So we see is what is mentioned there. All three are there. Right? So you have the gross, you have the subtle, and then you have the total material energy, which is also not manifest, but it's just homogeneous. Right? So there's stages. You know, it's like all the things, ingredients are in the pantry. Right? So that's pradhan. Then you take them out and you put them on the counter. That's avyakta. Right? Does that make sense? Then you start putting them together and everything. Then you get mahatattva. Right? And then eventually, if you follow the process, you know what you're doing, then you get the secondary creation where you actually see what you want manifest. That blob turns into something. Right? Right? And not only that, others say it's edible.
Yeah.
Energetic, it's energy. Not that it's, you know, got its, you know, how you say? You know, sweatpants on and the Nike shoes and is, you know, jogging around with the headband and the ponytail sticking out the back. You know, that's not what we're talking about. Okay? Yeah. Okay. "Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cause of manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, quality, and paraphernalia." So that means then everything goes on, because even though all that's destroyed, means the world of names is destroyed, he still has his names. The world of forms is destroyed, he still has his form. All the material qualities are destroyed, he still has his qualities. All the paraphernalia is he still has his. So that means he is Bhagavan, remains. Right? Maybe you don't see Paramatma in that universe because that universe doesn't exist. And so Paramatma, you know, of the souls, Paramatma of the universe doesn't exist. Paramatma of the Mahatattva exists only because, how you say, it's Mahatattva because the living entities want to be there. But he has his associates, as Arjuna and Krishna saw when they went to visit Mahavishnu. He came, walked out of his palace, greeted them on the stairs, invited them in, everything like that. Does that make sense? Performing his duties as Mahavishnu, then, you know, he's big, he's lying down, he's breathing. Right? Like that. But otherwise, that's as Paramatma of the Mahatattva. As Bhagavan, he has his palace and he does all this stuff, so that remains. Does that make sense? "My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy. and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. So direct or unmanifested total energy means you have all these subtle forms. What was the term you used here? Subtle conception. Right? So all that, he's the director of all that. And the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. So Pradhan is based in him. And then he's the director of how that becomes the subtle, and then that will become in Brahma's creation the gross. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potential energies. Right? So, he's still in control of time, from the moment up to the year. Right? And so, therefore, it doesn't matter how many times the vertically challenged person in the back seat says, "Are we there yet?" Then it doesn't speed up time like that. Does that make sense? They're still under the control of time. So, yeah. I just saw the other day on the train, differently abled. Yeah, but then someone asked a question. Does that mean Superman is also, is he's differently able? You know, a rhinoceros is differently able. So then, you know, what does that mean? Who's in that compartment? Yeah, and then just keep changing words. Because if you say something's before, say, is retarded or something, or like that, means it's not moving at the same speed as everything else or developing the same way. So it's a very pleasant way of saying something. But now that's the bad term, right? You know, or handicapped, you know, so it's just words. That's what we're saying. It's what's actually done.
These are the special.
Special?
Special Olympics.
Special Olympics, yeah.
It changes according to what kids start calling each other in primary school.
Yeah, okay, so whatever they call it, yeah. Yeah, whenever it becomes slang, then that's when it changes.
That's why they can't say gay anymore, they can't say car anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gay just meant happy. Because they were. They're flamboyant, colorful, happy, partying all the time. So they're like, yeah, that's what it meant. Okay. Oh. I guess we're done. Okay.
We're talking about powerful time.
Yes. Yes. The moment's marched on.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki